This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
From Space City, USA, Paul Bosch presents Wrestling Spectacular, matching the world's top wrestlers in fierce competition.
Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast. I'm Pete. I'm with Johnny. Johnny, man, how's it going?
Going well.
That's good, man. It's T-minus 48 hours for me.
I just started.
Yeah, I just started vacation officially today after my last day. And then off tomorrow to prep for packing. And then it's WrestleMania week. I was just on the Place to Be Nation's clothesline, the headlines with JT, Steve Willey, and the Godfather, and I went over my my itinerary for WrestleMania week, and when I read it out loud, it's really insane. Eight shows in 3 days is pretty freaking I think a lot.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, three of them are after midnight. I'm going to shows after midnight. And, I mean, when you really think about it, Sunday, I'm doing Mania. I'm doing an after midnight. I'm doing a show after Mania. And I'm tailgating on Mania Day. I'm probably going right from the show because I have a 7 o'clock flight. So instead of going home and taking, like, an hour nap, I'll probably just go straight to the airport and set my alarm at the gate so to make sure I don't miss my flight.
Oh, geez, that's going to be
I'll probably just sleep in the thing.
That's going to be one of those fun flights.
Yeah. At least it's only a 2-hour flight home, so I have straight shot. I don't have any stop or layovers or anything.
Sitting in a plane just sweating liquor.
Snoring. But hey, man, let's get on to the rest, brother. You open up with, like, this, like, clip. They show, like, a little 5 minutes. And, you know, you can't get a whole lot, but it's with Pat O'Connor and who's the other guy?
Killer Joe Christie.
Yeah, you know, what were your kind of thoughts of this? I've always been, like, all the Pat O'Connor stuff I've seen, I've really enjoyed. I thought he was a really great worker for the time period. But, you know, we don't have a whole lot of footage on him. But I get enough to realize that the guy can go. Like, we have that full match with him and Buddy Rogers from Comiskey Stadium, which I remember years ago I gave it like a 4.25-star match. I thought it was really incredible, mm-hmm. State-of-the-art at the time. And here, I enjoyed it more for the history lesson of Paul Bosch talking and giving us narration on Christie being the former boxer and kind of the history of these guys. What would you make of it?
Oh, yeah, well, that's just it. Paul Bosch is giving a history lesson like he's done in the past. And it's great because he was there. You know, he was older than these guys, you know, so
yeah. He's
got that perspective. But I just wrote down that Killer Joe Christie just looked like a young, spry Ed Asner. And the ref looked just like the lieutenant from Barney Miller.
Oh, man. Ed Asner, the thing I always get a kick out of, I mean, everyone knows him from Mary Tyler Moore and the Ed Asner Show. And
Lou Grant.
Lou Grant. And you know, everyone knows he was in the wrestler portraying, he portrayed what, Vern Gagne?
No, Vern was in that movie. So okay. I don't remember exactly. He was the promoter.
Okay, but the thing I always got a kick out of that he did voice work. And he played Granny Goodness in the super animated Superman thing, and so he's playing an old woman. I just get a kick out of that.
Well, the funniest thing about that.
What do you think about him as Lou Grant as this boisterous man's man of an editor? You know.
But that's the joke when Granny Goodness talks on those. It's just Ed Asner's voice, just so she just sounds just brutal, you know. And you know, he doesn't like try to do a higher pitch. It's just
no, he doesn't do a higher pitch, but he does keep it a little feminine. I mean, he tries to do it in feminine.
He's more dramatic. Like, you know, kill for a granny, you know. But it's still fucking Lou Grant and can have a woman's face. It's hilarious. Anyway, back to the wrestling. Speaking of Paul being there, he said, he's like, I knew these guys when they were youngsters. Yeah, but you did. And then he's just describing the difference between the wrestling of that period and the wrestling of this period.
I love that. I absolutely I mean, I popped by that. It really was great talking about the arm work and comparing it to nowadays where they're more about hurting the whole body.
Yeah, well, he put it this way. He said, see, back then, battles for arms were more important. So back in the 50s, that's what was important, battles for arms.
We don't
do that all the time anymore, but because he's doing that thing where he doesn't want to lose his audience who are like, what's this old boring wrestling, you know. He's like, he's giving it, this is history, let me just, you know. And it's all kayfabe too, which is great. And I can't get enough of these little Paul Bosch history bits. Like, they're delightful.
Which is kind of funny because nowadays, and I mean, when you think about it, that 1950 stuff has actually kind of made a resurgence with what they call it, the grapple fuck nowadays on the indie scene, with like the Timothy Thatchers and that type of ilk, which I enjoy. Mm-hmm. I enjoy the hell out of it. But I mean, it's a little bit more modernized too. But I've always been a guy who, you know, everyone knows, I think, I'm a mark for an arm, grabbing an arm bar and working it. It's tough.
I'm like,
but hey,
give me more haystacks, Calhoun, as a youngster.
Right. Oh man. Yeah, but overall, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of those type of things, of these things, but they're nice. But I bet you, for a change of pace on the television show, I think it'd be a nice little history piece. If I was running a show, I think I could see myself throwing like a nice little 5-minute history piece on my television show. What about you?
Well, I've said it in the past when we talked about it, that if the wrestling I was grew up watching every now and then had a little history moment, I would have thought that was the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, especially because you're a WWF fan, and when they kind of, I mean, history was not very important back in the 80s.
Well, yeah, really.
They were more about the current, and even nowadays, but nowadays they at least they embrace their history a lot better than they did.
But to be fair, I got every promotion, and nobody was doing little history lesson bits, really. You know, it was like
I'm totally agreeing with that part.
And nobody did.
No one did the history for the most part. But at least in some promotions, they would acknowledge their other history in other places. What I was getting at, like in the WWF, you would very rarely. I don't think Ronnie Garvin very rarely was referred to as a former world champion and stuff like that.
That's the NWA. That's the agreement. You know? So it just is what it is. But like, I think maybe the AWA, Vern, every now and then would show some sort of history thing, but it just was never that compelling.
It was back then. It was kind of dry and stuff, because that's how Vern promoted stuff. I remember a lot of times though, when they were doing the history lessons, it was more of a kind of like, hey, look, fuck you. Like, I think they were showing when they fired Vader. This was like, you know, in 95-ish. They were showing Vader getting pinned by Ric Flair and other people when they just fired him out of WCW.
So there was a bunch of those. There was the Vader, and they did a... there was a couple that they did. They showed, like, them getting beat up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Bill Watts was famous for it. I mean, he'd put on stuff and make it happen, sound like it happened like yesterday.
Oh, yeah.
So I remember an Iron Sheik Butch Reed match, which was made the Death Valley Driver set, but the commentary was like in 1984.
I remember
the match, but I think it was like a 1982 or 1981 match.
Oh, yeah, I remember that match. But with anyway, moving on.
Right. And then we go into these awesome promos between Doc and DiBiase, Jim Ross and Paul Bosch, and then we get Buddy Roberts and Michael Hayes with Jim Ross. I mean, this just shows what how awesome Paul Bosch is, throwing the big old life preserver to Doc Williams, to having to kind of explain his promo for him. What'd you take of Paul Bosch making the save and all that? And talk about the Freebirds.
Oh, well, holy shit, yeah. Yeah, Doc is lost, and Paul.
I mean, DiBiase's promo was a textbook promo.
Yeah.
Wasn't dynamic, but it was good, solid promo.
Yeah, well, first of all, I don't recall ever hearing about how this Houston cage is special. You know, this is a new bit of lore for me. There's cages, but there's the Houston cage. You know, no one's ever broken in.
Yeah. And they make a big deal of it because this is true in the history that in Galveston, Texas, it was the very first.
Oh, right, yeah. But it did, apparently it was like they're saying this cage is metal. All cages are metal, but this is the hardest metal. which is cool, and they're putting that over, but then all I just write down is boy Paul just is saving Doc because he's just repeating himself over and over, and he's bringing him in. He's throwing him a life preserver.
Yeah, like you see Doc was like, "Yeah, I want to fight the three Freebirds back to back to back."
Yeah,
and
he's
and
explaining.
Paul's like, and Paul's like, "Oh shit, these are probably thinking that he wants them all in one night. I better save this son of a bitch."
Yeah, because he said, "Look, this is what we're doing. This is my long-term promotion. You know, it's gonna be this." And he realized, oh, he's not getting that across. So he's floundering. So he just brings him in, and he's leading him like Perry Mason would lead a witness, into saying what he needs him to say. It's really great.
Yep. And then the seeing eye dog with the blind man,
And then we got the Freebirds, and they're furious and they're mad. And Buddy just looks hysterical in his skin tight wife beater undershirt and his tights. Then he's all puffed up and I see him and I start laughing. He's awesome. And what do you say? He's like, Michael Hayes got the great line. I sleep better at night when I know violence is coming up. I was like, yeah, that's awesome. And then they're talking about Doc. He's like, and Buddy Jack here, he's been kicking Dr. Death's butt ever since their days on the football field in college. And Buddy Roberts is like, 4 years ago when I played college ball, I wiped the gridiron with Doc Williams. And it's the funniest thing because he's old. He's been wrestling for 20 years of this.
Forever. And then you have Jim Ross as the greatest like straight man with the facial expressions like, you fucking, you can call him a liar, but he's like looking like insane. Because especially now when we know the history of what a huge OU fan Jim Ross is, it makes it even more sweeter the interview.
Yeah,
and
rolling his eyes and shit. Yeah, it's great. The Freebirds part of this is just off the chain. It's so good.
One of those things is like Michael Hayes, we all know he's a great promo. And, a lot of times he kind of gets short shrifted because you don't remember how great of a promo is until he cuts a promo because he wasn't on, TBS religiously. I mean, he was on it in the early Georgia Championship Wrestling days, but he really wasn't on it at the really super height of cable TV. And so more of his stuff happened on syndications, there and in World Class, and even in the UWF later on, or doing here on Houston Wrestling. And so, his promos weren't, it wasn't like a week-to-week thing, like with the Ric Flairs and the Dusty Rhodes and the Randy Savages and that type of ilk, where you remember him. I mean, but once you hear him cut a promo, then you kind of remember,
Totally. It just brings up memories also of, I remember at the time, this was when I was getting past being angry about gimmick changes and name changes and WWF and stuff, but when I saw Doc Hendricks, when I was getting into wrestling again, I'd always want to just throw a shoe at the television. I was like, ugh, I hated it so much. It was like, that's Michael Hayes, and what's this?
Yeah.
What is this?
Yeah, when they uncooled him in the WWE, the first time I saw that, I don't even remember. I don't remember. I didn't get the pay-per-view, but I was listening. I'm such a dork. I was listening to it in Scramble Vision, and I'm hearing Doc Hendricks. I'm like, that kind of sounds like Michael Hayes. And then I see it on Raw the next day, and I'm like, oh my God, that is Michael Hayes, and he's not cool. It was just like they just totally sucked the coolness out of him.
I mean,
beyond funny. The short haircut and the tuxedo.
Didn't he have? Didn't he wear a diamond in his cleft? You know,
it could have been.
I think that's okay though. Horrible. But no, I. You know, granted, apparently he's super proud of that. You know, like, he's like, I did what I did, and I did it great. You know, and but still, I'm like, yeah, okay, but oh, that was the worst thing ever because I knew what kind of a promo this guy could be, and color commentator. As was proved in UWF, and him and Jim Ross were.
He was incredible. Great. Him and Jim Ross were incredible.
They were the favorite announced team of that time period.
Yeah, I also loved in that promo how he goes, and you won right here because of me.
That's right. That's right.
That was fantastic. And speaking of Jim Ross, we just want to offer our condolences to about him losing his wife.
Terrible.
Losing a loved one is always hard, but when you lose them so suddenly in a freak accident, I don't want to say it makes it worse or anything, but it's just hard to brace them. And go forth, go strong, Jim, and condolences from Johnny and myself. Oh, on that note, why don't we take a break, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Clotheslines and Headlines, Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows. And we leave wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the Our Vantage Point podcast, which features a potpourri-style look at wrestling history, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. And on our very popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler podcast, Our Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversations, Geek and Sassy, and the Imaginary Stories. You can find all these current shows, plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows, plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, thehistoryofwrestling.com, and Scott Keith's blog, of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
And we are back. And we're back with some more footage. And this is taking place on August 8th. Of 2019, let's start over there again. This match is with Joe Savoldi versus Gustavo Mendoza, September. Not September again. God damn it! Let's scratch all this. Ready?
Yeah.
3, 2, 1. And we are back, and we're back, and we're looking at Joe Savoldi versus Gustavo Mendoza from August 22nd, 1986, and I absolutely thought this was a terrible match. Savoldi is from the famous wrestling family, the Savoldis. We've been indoctrinated into him on WWF television for years. He was a pretty big star in the, in that low, real low-level promotion, ICW, during the... I always remember it because they had a really great Tony Atlas heel run where he was cutting just great promos, but his body was shot, but he was this... You never saw Tony Atlas as a heel before, and he was just tremendous in the role. But Savoldi's worked all over the place, but never really got an over. Never really made it big, and... I gotta say, Mustafa is overselling big time early on, and it's pretty grand. The crowd is really into this match, which just shocked the hell out of me. Savoldi, and this is what his nickname was, is Jumpin' Joe Savoldi, and he, of course, he throws a great looking drop kick. We see a big corner bunk by Savoldi, and then Mustafa's time to get the heat, and I gotta say, it's pretty tame. The crowd wants to hate him. And he's working a chin lock. I mean, it was just so... I mean, it was just... We went right to a wrestle. His heat segment was a wrestle. He's not even working the crowd. Just terrible. The heat segment was terrible. And you can just tell the difference between a jobber and the next match. We'll see how like a one-man gang works the heat segment. Just totally different and dynamic. One's a jobber and one's a main eventer who knows how to do a dynamic heat segment. This was terrible. Savoldi makes a comeback, and it's a baby. It's very baby-facious in nature. Pretty much, this is pretty much get your popcorn in the match because it, man, it was just there. I think to eat some time up on the card. What were your thoughts here, man?
Or get some coke, you know?
Yeah.
Get you through this match. Yeah, I'm just gonna add, jumping is a shitty nickname. It's I'm sorry, you're not threatening when you're jumping. I'm jumping
and new are like the two worst ways to be have a nickname.
I mean, I guess Jumping Jim Brunzel managed to get that and you'd still be kind of okay, you know, like, okay, but otherwise.
But he's part of a team called the High Flyer, so at least it made some logistical sense.
Yeah. It's Savoldi, Scott Gacy, Al Perez, and Wendell Cooley should have been a faction of clones.
Weren't they? They were the original job squad who actually got some push here.
But no, because they all look identical. They've got hair and mustaches and same bodies. You know, Scott Hall could be their leader for around this time.
Yeah, you're right. Man, they easily... they could have been... All passed off for family members, too.
I know. I get them all mixed up. The whole gimmick of Mendoza, is that Cuban assassin whole thing. You know, he's a fucking Castro revolutionary, which I think by this time was kind of like so ridiculous of a gimmick. You know, even in the 80s, you're like, you know, I mean, that's why they're booing him, so maybe it's working, but it's like, really? I'm like, this is the Reagan's America, where hundreds of thousands of Cubans, or probably less, but have fled Castro, and have come to America and become the most patriotic citizens, you know, super Republican, waving the flag because Reagan took them in, away from that. And so you got a Cuban character who's this guy. You know, that's outdated. Although there was the one drunk guy going, USA! USA! At the end, all by himself. So, yeah, this wasn't worth to this.
Yeah, sorry, folks. This is definitely on the pass. But then we get, from the same show, we get One Man Gang versus Gary Young. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, this could be okay. But, man, it far exceeded my expectations. Gang easily has been one of all my favorite gimmicks. I've always loved the one-man gang. I think it's one of the coolest nicknames, and especially when he went into the skull and the all-black and the chains. I thought it really made him. For me, when he became Akeem, I cried a little. I shed a tear. But it was a fun gimmick, don't get me wrong. But the gang.
I was not a fan of that. Yeah, no.
Especially when you go from the one-man gang, which was a money-drawing gimmick, to...
I do understand why they did it, because... I mean, that was right... I just really kind of stopped watching. But every now and then, I'd see what's going on here. I'm like, oh, what the fuck is this? And go, this is terrible. It's too kiddie. And that was it. Yeah. This one-man gang was brought in, and he went through the Hogan system. And they were letting him stick around, but it was getting real cartoony for kids at the time. And the look of the one-man gang was legitimately scary and sleazy looking and was frightening. You know, with the like you said, the jean jacket, the cut-off jean jacket and everything. And maybe Vince thought it was a little too scary for the little kid market he was going for at the time, and then gave him something a bit more wacky. So, I mean, you know, I get it, but... You know, geez, you're right. The one-man gang's look is one of the best looks of wrestlers ever had.
Yeah, and you really think about it. When him and Boss Man teamed up, how much more intimidating would they have been if it was the Big Boss Man and one-man gang as opposed to the Big Boss Man and the heel?
Well, that's just it, though, because the Big Boss Men were fucking wrestling in a prison guard uniform, which I always thought was ridiculous as well.
But he was pretty scary when he beat the crap out of the jobbers with that freaking nightstick.
Yeah, I could never get past the fucking costume. I'm like, yeah, okay.
I can see that.
Back then, I hated wrestlers who wrestled in street clothes like that.
You know, I had a problem too, honestly.
Like Mr. Hughes, and Big Bubba, you know, wrestling in suits. It was one of those things that got under my craw when I was
like glasses
teenager.
That never fell off. Yeah, they drove me nuts too. It was like, how in the hell? But yeah, I'm with you there, brother.
But boy, when I was a teenager, that pissed me off.
Yeah, you better not. Now it's like commonplace, really. Or a lot of them do anyway. And then I get a kick out of it because One Man Gang is managed by Akbar. And later in the decade, Gary Young would eventually become managed by Akbar as part of WWE.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
In the Dallas territory.
That didn't even occur to me when I was watching this.
Yeah, it's just one of those things because I love Texas wrestling so much. Right. I loved Young stomping on One Man Gang's foot to be able to reverse the wrist lock. And, of course, One Man Gang sells it big. I mean, that's the key to being a monster, is being able to show, like, the Achilles heel or, the splinter in the foot type of thing. And it was awesome here. I liked Young staying on the arm. I loved the tease, which they did. Gang did a really good job of they milked it really well. Of teasing the pulling of the tights with One Man Gang and Young, and they did a great job engaging the crowd with it, where the crowd just eating it up. They're getting every ounce they could out of this spot, and I thought Tommy Gilbert's reactions to it were fantastic, where he's like running around in circles trying to catch him, and it just as a package, I thought that was such a well milked and executed spot where they got humanly everything possible out of it, and I gotta say I give that all credit to 99% to One Man Gang and 1% to Tommy Gilbert on the sell job of it. I loved Young going after the wrist. One Man Gang turns the tide and tosses Young to Akbar on the outside. I thought that was a great way to get heat because the crowd just freaking hates Akbar. And he's just beating on Gary Young, who they build from Houston. So now they're billing Young as like the local underdog babyface. So another great way to get great heat with the crowd. Love them doing kind of like the King of the Ring spots, King of the Mountain spots with One Man Gang. Makes perfect sense being that big. I'm loving One Man Gang still selling the repercussions of the wrist damage. We get an eye rake by One Man Gang, and he's in full bully mode here. And being a monster, that's such a key part of being able to play it here. Gang misses a standing avalanche in the corner, and then Young makes his comeback. It was perfectly timed, I think, too. Young lights him up with forearms, bob kicks. Young misses, and then he eats a clothesline, and we get a big leg drop by One Man Gang for the win. I just thought this thing was so smartly worked. I mean, they made Kang made Young look like $1 million before beating him, and you gave him enough where you thought, man, Young might be able to pull the upset off. It was so well balanced, so well worked. The timings of the cutoffs and the timings of the comebacks, the timing of the heat, everything here I thought was worked to perfection. This was like a one-man gang masterpiece in a way of taking a young kid and making him look like $1 million. And then we get a really fun Akbar promo. Mm-hmm. Overall, I got to give this thing 3 stars. Great one-man gang performance. And I thought Young was very good in it. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to make it sound like it was all one-man gang. But it was clearly one-man gang calling it, set it up, and he allowed Young to be able to look as good as he did. But Young brought, carried his end of the stick, too. What do you think of the match?
You know, I love that you pull the tights, I'll bite you. Spot, and I was like, you know, Gary's biting Gang, and I'm just like, don't put that in your mouth. You don't know where that's been. Look at him. And then as far as the match goes, I just wrote, One Man Gang rules. He's so awesome. I love that in recent years, a lot of people have come around you know, on being like, oh, no, that guy was awesome. You know, he wasn't just a big, fat, giant, stiff of the 80s that everyone likes to shit on, you know. Like, that guy was good.
Great psychology, yeah.
And he could move, you know, yeah, for a guy that size. Because he was a fucking giant. And to that point, I wrote down, this was my worst Monday morning quarterback idea ever. But it wasn't too soon after this. Woman Gang becomes UWF champion.
Yep.
And I remember at the time thinking, really? I mean, I liked him, but I was like, that guy's the champ, you know? And it speaks to Watts's, like, Watts, like, big talented but giants, you know, that he got his start in Madison Square Garden with Vince Sr. and everything. And that's, he had that same mentality of the big dudes, you know, but he wanted to make sure they could work. The big dudes. So that's why you're like Terry Gordy, who was in the tag team, and now he's a singles guy. One Man Gang, you know, and, you know, eventually Bubba Rogers, but then it was Crockett, so whatever. But, you know, and Steve Williams, and whether or not he was ready for it or not. And as we saw by the reaction in Houston when Ted DiBiase, they thought he won the belt, the explosion, I'm like, well, maybe they should have gone with him, but Watts was maybe like, oh, maybe, I don't know. We'll save that, but I want the bigger dudes.
Yeah, Duggan too, you know.
Duggan, you know, Duggan, you could see he was a superstar. Yeah. I could see him as a tough guy.
And like Matt D.F., I covered it well on Pro Wrestling Only, is that not only could Will Yang work, but he was actually kind of a logical choice, as in he wasn't doing Japan tours like Doc and Corey, so he didn't have to do injury angles every few weeks or months to explain why they weren't here and stuff. So
I get it now. I mean, when I was 16, there was it's like, oh, that guy was like a mid card guy, and you know that I rib out, you know, in PWI or whatever, and you know, and I wasn't looking at the match quality as much.
Yeah, for me, I never viewed him as a mid card guy because I came up on Von Erich television, and he was always in the main event there when he was in Dallas versus the Von Erich.
But and when I got world class, he had already left. So, but anyway, I did. I just think it's a neat correlation with, you know, Bill Watts started with Bruno and up there in New York. He liked
big
hosses did, you know, just as much as they did in New York.
Yeah, he was always looking for a baby face in his type of style, which was Duggan and Doc in particular, two of the guys more in the, you know, the ex-football player who
definitely the
had a legit,
player,
who had, especially Doc, who had a little bit of a legit wrestling background, who had a real legit wrestling background, and it was tough as nails.
And before we move on, one of the things that like turned me off about wrestling, this was right around the time when I was starting to like, was the night I sat down to watch UWF wrestling, and I was like, why is Jim Cornette's bodyguard wrestling the One Man Gang for the title? Oh, he won it?
Yeah.
And I was like, and I remember going, fuck this, and I immediately lost interest.
Yeah, what Crockett and Dusty did to the UWF was just actually disgusting when you think about it.
And looking back, I've watched that match again. It's a pretty darn good match.
Yeah, it is, but...
But, I was at the remember the time going, you know what, I'm not watching this anymore.
Yeah, it was just a way of putting over Crockett talent on the UWF talent and squashing
I watched it a bit because I remember really liking the Terry Taylor heel turn, but then there wasn't a lot else.
That was the best part. I just remember originally when they first started running Houston, they started deep pushing the UWF guys. They had a problem drawing Crockett in Houston right off the bat.
I would imagine so.
Yeah. Next up, we have a pretty good 6-man tag with Tully Blanchard, him and Gino have been great together. Tully by himself has been great, and he looks great here. Teaming with Buck Robley and Tank Patton for Scott Casey, Tiger Conway Jr., Bobby Duncombe Jr. from September 18th, 1981, which makes the date kind of, I don't know, weird, but Tully must have done double duty. He also tagged up with Gino to tag up. I think it was against, maybe it was Dos Caras and Mil Máscaras, but it was a Mil Máscaras partner. I can't remember who off the top of my head. But also, one other thing. Also, we got those promos earlier from the Freebirds and stuff. And all three of those cage matches are on the service, so if you want to check them out. Except, obviously, not the Doc and Gordy one, because it ended up being DiBiase filling in for Doc. But we had the three cage matches. All three are up there. I enjoyed the six-man tag. It starts off with a wild brawl start. Had that kind of Raw as Wars feeling back during the Attitude Era, where they're just going nuts right off the bat. Settles down, and we get a really nice shine sequence. Finally, Tully cuts off Tiger, and the heels start to get heat. And Tiger, as we've seen in the footage, is a pretty good face in peril, and he's good here. I like Tank using his weight by leaning on Tiger. It's really smartly worked. I liked Roby just throws this nasty right at one point. This just takes Tiger down. Casey gets the hot tag, and now the ring fills up. And finally, order is maintained. Tully ping-ponging for Duncombe. I really like Duncombe as a walking tall babyface here. I think Matt D. said it best when he combined him to... he was like Blackjack Mulligan of Houston. And I really like that. All the faces getting a piece of Tully, of course, because Tully's such a master of he's a master of giving in a match. And then we get this great battle of hosses between Duncan and Patton. And then we see Robley working over Duncan. And this is kind of like an AWA tag structure where we get a double heat segment now while they're working over a Duncan. And this is the second heat segment. But the crowd is totally with Duncan, as you know, Texas boy. Casey gets the tag, and the ring fills up again. So he doesn't even ever get a really great hot tag run. But he scores a win, and I thought this was a good, solid tag. 3.25 stars. With Tully as the shining star. Bobby Duncombe looked fantastic as a babyface here, which didn't really translate in most places. But for here, he really did as the walking tall babyface with Tiger and Casey, as he's like the lead cowboy. I really dug the dynamic here. What about you?
It was okay. Apparently Tiger and Tank have issues that we don't know about yet, so maybe we'll see some more footage and find out about that. And I did like that Tiger did the old "made you hit yourself" with his gimmick, you know, because he's got the Iron Mike Sharp gimmick on his arm, and he, you know, hits him in the head with his own gimmick. And so I love it. It's a total Three Stooges spot, and I adore it. And speaking about Tully Given, there's nothing better than when Tully is in a tag situation and he's doing that. He's going to, okay, the ref's not looking. He's not looking. Okay, go, go, go. And goes to run in. And then the ref turns around, or the babyface he's about to jump turns around. And he does this like scattering like a crab back bump. Like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like he stops and does this back bump. Like he knows he just got caught and he's just like cowering away. And he makes it look so smooth, and it's so entertaining. You know, it's like, that nobody does it like that.
Right.
You know, nobody does that. You know, and it's great. You know, just totally gets over his conniving character. And And like we said last time, you know, and if he does get a hold of the guy, then he'll put him in a scientific hold after, you know, doing something nefarious. And then to the finish, they got two refs in the ring because they have two refs in these tag matches, and they both get fooled. You know, they both get fooled at the same time. You know, so, you know, what's the point?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like I get why they're using it to try to restore order to make it look more. But yeah, if you're going to make fool them both, why? I mean, what's the point? Yeah, I'm with you on that one, brother. Yeah.
And I did, and I liked the match, and I did like, apparently sitting in the crowd, and I don't know if you noticed this, but apparently Count Basie was in attendance. Count Basie.
Who's
Count Basie? Yeah. Oh, okay. Legendary jazz musician, Count Basie.
Sorry, buddy.
Big band. He's one of the foundations of popular American music. He was African American gentleman.
Well,
a sailor's cap.
We were born in different generations and stuff, so.
Oh, not really. Not really.
Oh, man. On that Count Basie note, why don't we take a break? And
ooh, note. Count Basie note. Okay, good.
We'll be right back. Good.
The Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Subscribe on iTunes or on Android with your favorite podcast app. Established in 2013, the Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network is committed to providing unique takes on the rich and diverse medium of professional wrestling, focusing on its history and global impact, but also exploring the vibrant contemporary scene. The roll call includes Space City, an NWA On Demand podcast, This Week in Wrestling, Stacey and Elliott's Bogus Journey, the Super Apoitas podcast, the Military Industrial Suplex, Strong Style History, Puro Puri, and Psychology is Dead. Also, from the archives, the full catalog of great shows that provided a fresh look at classic wrestling, including Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, Letters from Kayfabe, Wrestling Culture, Pro Wrestling Super Show, Goodwill Wrestling, and many, many others. Pro Wrestling Only Podcast Network. Only the best.
And we are back, fresh off a Count Basie history lesson. And guess what? Johnny has some more.
No, so Pete, I assume you've seen Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
Okay, when Bart is first being a sheriff and he's riding through the desert and there's that big band jazz playing,
yes,
and there's an actual orchestra in the desert and the band leader is an African-American gentleman who like gives him like a hey high five as he rides by.
Yeah.
That's Count Basie.
Okay.
All right, so,
there you go. That puts it in so much better context of a 1970s movie, or is it even the 80s?
It was a 70s. Oh, it was definitely the 70s.
Oh, man. But hey, we're back to some wrestling. And we have Eddie Mansfield versus Dr. Tom Pritchard, June 26, 1981. On the footage we've seen, Mansfield's been a guy who I've enjoyed a lot. I think he's shown been pretty dynamic, real fun worker. He's a guy I'd love to have on my roster as like a mid-card heel. And you could actually push into events here and there. He got a kind of a, I mean, he wrote that book and kind of like, you know, screwed himself in the business. But yeah, I mean, I don't see world champion material in the guy, but I see that he was a good worker. And for promoters, if they say, oh, I didn't see anything in him, I think they're just full of shit. Because the guy could go, the guy could work. And you could always have a, you always could use good workers, good hands in the ring. And I like both these guys. Mansfield's been good. Dr. Tom's a guy I've always liked his psychology. And right here, you know, Tom Pritchard clearly has an understanding of the psychology early on. I mean, I love Mansfield using the ropes as leverage to gain the advantage. Tom reverses it and really works over the arm. So Pritchard's just a good, solid, plucky baby face here. For our second match on the card, this was excellent, you know. You didn't need them to, they weren't there to steal the show. It was just a second match card. They were there to have a good competitive match, and that's what we got here. The crowd got into it. The match maybe went a tad over a little long, but overall I thought it was really effective, like a good 2.5-star solid match. And if that's your second match on the card, in the 80s, that's a damn good match. What you make of it?
Oh, yeah. Apparently, Mansfield was the continental lover. Yep. But he's a rat. Can you imagine the Goodfellas and Sopranos-like conversations that went on about this dude?
Oh, yeah.
After that 2020 fucking piece.
Oh, yeah.
Him and that other guy, his name escapes me, but, you know, they were blading on
Jim
TV.
Wilson.
That was the whole
Jim Wilson.
Yeah, that was the whole John Stossel fucking thing. You know, you imagine they were just like, yeah, we ought to cut their throats and throw them in the river.
Oh, yeah.
You know, but that's funny because the more we see of him, I was like, oh, this guy was a pretty entertaining bad guy. I always just thought he was one of those southern job guys who just bounced around and we were okay.
Yeah.
But no, he did a solid, you know, as we'll see, there was a haircut match and that's all a lot of fun. So he's a, you know, that mid-level heel,
yeah.
You know. Who has his own little, who manages a few guys and has his own little clique, you know. There's always room for that. You know, guys with Continental Lover, you know, who get their head shaved and shit, you know. And he was good at it,
yep.
So, yeah. But I didn't like the finish because there was a thing with, like, the ref was missing the count. And then the babyface rolls him up for some shit and he gives him a real fast count. And I always hate that. That's a Dick Worley shit.
Right, yeah.
but the match is fun. You could see that Tom Pritchard was going to be something.
Yeah, he definitely had the mechanics down. He knew the psychology. He was a good, as Steve Austin would say, he was a good mechanic in the ring already, you know?
He's a good mechanic. I'm just a mechanic in WCW.
Yeah. I think Steve Austin puts himself down a little too much in WCW. But I'm digressing.
I disagree with that.
What?
I mean, I disagree because I get what he's meaning, but anyway.
No, I mean, I get what he's saying too, but I wouldn't say being. I mean, he was a U.S. champion, TV champion, World Tag Team champion. I mean, that's a pretty good push, you know. It's not more than a mechanic, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, I guess I always thought it was gonna be a difference the way we as fans look at it, and then as guys on the roster look at it at that time. This was my things. I think that's what he meant by that.
Gotcha. All right. And then we're moving into the main event, which is Colonel Buck Robley, Don't Call Me Yella, versus Scott Casey, June 26, 1981, bounty match. And this is set up because Eddie Mansfield put a $5,000 bounty on Casey because Casey beat Mansfield in a hair match. I dig bounty matches. I like them. I think it's an easy way to get heat in a match and build something for two guys who might have nothing to do with each other, but instantly they do because one of the heels trying to get money. I really like Robley's focus on the arm. Casey counters and gives Robley a taste of his own medicine. Now Robley's targeting the neck and throat area, and I thought this was worked really vicious on the neck and throat area. Casey tees a comeback, but it's cut off. Now Robley moves on to the leg, and it looks like Robley's throwing everything at the wall and hopes something sticks when it comes to working a body part. Casey starts up another comeback, and the crowd is with him 100%. They're all behind Casey because you know why? Robley's a despicable heel, and people just don't like him. And there's nothing redeeming about him from his look to his, he looks like Helter Skelter, for crying out loud, to the yellow shirt, body type is not respectable, to the cast, I mean, everything, we get a sleeper from, Casey, the crowd erupts, but the heel cheats and get the win. I thought they told a really great story here, and I thought Casey's selling was really strong. And I thought this was a really good match, and I gave it 3.5 stars. Then we got some really fun promos. I'll let you carry that end of the stick here, Johnny. What you make of the match and the promos, man?
Well, I loved that, you know, Mansfield has the money, you know, and the towel over his head and shit. And whenever Robley needs, you know, to be woken up or, you know, get a little inspiration, he waves the money in his face so he can smell the money. And when he smells the money, he wakes up. He's like, oh.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I love the cash. There was the loaded cash shot. Always love that shit. Robley sells like a big gangly Lou Albano. he's got a lot of that Lou Albano selling type with the weight, with the roll in the arms, oh, and shit, you know, and just as sleazy looking. And I would imagine it's a little long, but I did enjoy it. Man, these people love Scott Casey. I don't know how much of that is them actually loving Scott Casey or they fucking hate McGrovey. But and hate Mansfield. You know, doing the manager shit at ringside and everything. And yeah, this was a lot of fun. You know, it was really, could be hard to watch sometimes. Yeah. You know, he's definitely that old school Oxbaker type of maniac heel. But, you know, I enjoy him at times. And of course,
in doses. Yeah.
T-shirt. You know, nobody calls me yellow.
I'm with you. I've said the CM Punk story ad nauseum, so I won't bring it up again. But yeah, man, this is NWAOnDemand.com.
Oh, but the promos.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're on the promos. I'm totally forgot. Hold on.
So first you got the heels with Bosch, and fucking Tank is a pretty good promo. You know, and he's talking to Paul Vash, and he's like, "I'm gonna tell you something, baby." And he's like, "I'm not your baby." And he keeps calling him baby and shit. He's being very disrespectful to Paul Vash, and you don't see that a lot.
Nope.
And I love it. And I love it.
Yeah, most heels call him Mr. Bosch. Yeah.
In this promo, some of the heels with him are calling him Mr. Bosch. You know, and he keeps calling him baby. And even Buck Robley is calling him Mr. Bosch during this. And I'm like, looking at this group of guys, of the group of heels, I was like, I like this group. This would be a group of heels that I liked, you know, in the 80s. You know, I'd be cheering for. I'd be cheering for these guys like a motherfucker because they're entertaining, you know, like crazy and sleazy looking, and they don't all look the same, but you know, there's something definitely visceral about them, but entertaining on the microphone. They're very over the top.
Yeah, it's like what Obi-Wan Kenobi said from the Star Wars movie about the cantina. Never been a like villainy,
Mos Eisley,
whatever. Yeah.
He's like Mos Eisley space part. Never has there been a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Yeah, that's what these guys are. You know.
Yeah, it's my guys. And then the baby faces. You got the Mexican Connection with Scott Casey, and Scott Casey, he's pissed off and he's bloody, And he's like, "Oh, I'm going to get you because I got the Mexican Connection with me. You dirty old rabbit." Sounds like fucking, you know, 70 Sam. And he takes off to get stitches. And you got Chavo with his fucking long hair and his cool beard with his gold chains out over his t-shirt. Chavo looks fucking gangster. He looks cool as fuck. I was like, that's a cool tag team right there. They got cool matching t-shirts. With the Mexican Eagle on the back.
And the Chavo was putting over the Mexican Connection as a name. Huge.
Yeah, big time. Because they're going to eventually pretty quickly break these guys up into a feud. But and then I even love, you know, they cut the promo. And then Paul goes, "En Español?" I'm like, okay. And they cut some big, long promo in Spanish. Chavo does. And because that's also Paul Bosch knows his market, you know, and that's, he's just, there's a lot of Spanish speaking people. When Chavo was a hero, "Please, could you please get that in Spanish?" And it wasn't like a blip, it was long. And Paul said no, because that's Bosch, I think, encouraged far more bilingualism than any other promoter on a television show.
Besides LA, when you think about it. And it was, he followed the mentor. It doesn't matter what who's paying the money, green, black, yellow, blue, it all's green at the box office.
Right, but he also, as the pillar of the community guy, and as everything we know about him, he's probably just like, no, this is part of my audience, and they deserve to hear it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, clearly. He's pushed Hispanic people more than anybody, except for maybe in L.A.
I think they're a bit of, you know, it's good business sense, but I think it's also it's altruism. I know it sounds like we're always kissing this guy's ass, but everything we read about, you know, I mean, Gary Hart has criticisms about some of his booking decisions, but never about the content of his character or anything. So, you know, you haven't really heard much of anything bad about the guy.
Anything bad about the guy except for Vince and stuff, but yeah.
Yeah, well, that's all his business bullshit. Anyway. Yeah, these are fun. I definitely preferred the heels.
Of course. course you did. Man, that's NWA On Demand. It's a Space City and NWAOnDemand.com podcast. Check out the Tubi app. If you want to watch it on your Roku, you can stream it from your phone if you download the Tubi app. I suggest it. I use it. Johnny, you got to, and remember, if you want to sign up, $8.99, you get the first week free. Johnny, do you have anything to plug?
Actually, me and Kelly, also, there's no such thing as a former Titan. We're like the Marines, you know, always a Titan. But we do our comic book, podcast, you know, every couple months, you know, and, we've been talking about it for a while. Figured the time is right because, we've been talking about it even before the TV show became a hit, Riverdale, because we said we should talk about Archie comics because we like to talk about the history of comic books and not the stuff that everybody talks about all the time. And we're like, that's a huge thing, you know. And now Riverdale on the CW is a like smash freaking hit. You know, just got renewed for like the season, and they've ordered extra episodes and stuff. It's a hit. So we're like, so let's strike while the iron is hot. Then we can get that sweet Archie listenership. And we recorded the other night, and I believe it's dropping tonight or tomorrow.
That's awesome. And
it's called Imaginary Stories. I'm burying the fucking name. I stink.
Okay, Johnny. We all know you do. I you can also hear me. I was over on, like I said earlier, at the Place to Be Nation site. I was over on the boys with Clotheslines and Headlines talking about my WrestleMania weekend experience. Just also a reminder, we'll be doing a big tailgate at WrestleMania. If anybody's interested in coming, we're going to have a huge spread. It's like $25 a person. Booze, food, booze, food, food. Last year was an incredible tailgate. My man Nick Duke just went far and beyond. And this year, I hear he's even going even farther, taking it to the next level in Orlando.
Oh, really? I'm picturing this weekend's going to end up like that movie, Very Bad Things.
And
you're in a desert marrying a hooker.
This guy has season tickets to the Falcons and to, I guess, one other thing. I forget what it is. University of Georgia football. So the guy's like a professional tailgater almost. And so it was great last year. If anybody's interested, reach out to us on their Facebook page or hit us up on social media, and we could probably provide you with a link on how you can join us and stuff. A really fun time, I'm telling you. It's a great way to kick off your WrestleMania day. With that said, why don't you guys have fun this week? It's Mania week, so a lot of wrestling over on all these apps, over on Flow Slam. I mean, there's going to be a ton of shows. I'll be there. A lot of our friends will be there. A lot of your friends will be there. A lot of the people you've heard do these podcasts will be there. And it's just a lot of wrestling for the week, man. And speaking of wrestling, watch what you're enjoying. That's all that matters. Peace out, folks.
He came from Texas seeking fortune and fame. Rose pretty quickly to the top of the game. Defender of the downtrodden. King of the hill. Tag team champion with Al Madrill. Before a black and white TV in the middle of the night, I'm lying on the floor, I'm bathed in blue light. The telecast's in Spanish, I can understand some, and I need justice in my life. Here it comes, the Kai is my last hope. Chavo Guerrero, coming off the top rope. Red shoes, Dugan, holding his arm high.